So when I first heard this, my mind is scrambling. I'm like, why would we be playing the entrance song for The Undertaker? And then wow. It dawned on me that the Grappler is up to no good behind the scenes, because there's a lot of people wondering about what could be happening with Jim Benning out in Vancouver.
Yes,
that's right. And there have been some rumors, right? Our buddy Matt Sakaris was tweeting about it, reporting it on his podcast a little while ago, that he has heard that maybe ownership in Vancouver not so happy with Jim Benning and a little bit concerned about how the marketplace is responding to him.
Tell you what, Hayes, it's a dangerous game for the owner to go fanboying it and dealing with your former players. And I don't know, there was talk last week of Jeff Courtnell, the Sedins now. It's like, if that's your only option is to fanboy it as an owner, that's a dangerous game, man.
That's true, because, you know, the Sedins are a great, you know, great players. How are they in... Now, it says potential roles within the organization. Doesn't mean that they're going to be the GM. Like, they can't, you know. And plus, why are you doing it right now? You still have two games to play. You know, maybe you look at it on Thursday, but this isn't, you know, this isn't the Rangers. Like, the Rangers was the most bizarre one.
The Rangers, it is, Noodles, but it basically is. Like, right when you said that, I'm like, literally a team did that, where they decided to move on from everybody with games left in the schedule, and maybe that's what's going on in Vancouver.
They're done by tomorrow.
Right. The only thing that with the Rangers, that the statement, I don't care what people say, the statement, that was somebody's nail in the coffin right there, whether they agreed with it or not, because the statement was the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen. That's probably not firing. People come and go. You get fired all the time. The statement... Like the, what do you, I always draw
horrifying
like
a, act of violence. No, it was the most,
act of violence.
It really was an embarrassing statement. It was really, truly embarrassing. And maybe that, I don't know what's going on in Vancouver, but there's a lot of smoke there. And we just posted the tweet, Darren Dreger tweeting out that there's speculation of change in Vancouver. And he's told the Canucks ownership is involved in ongoing discussions with Henrik and Daniel Sedin about a potential role. Bobby Mack jumping on there with the eyes wide open emoji. quote tweet, so maybe Bob knows what's cooking and he's not willing to go all the way in because he's semi-retired, but he probably knows what's up. So maybe we're going to have some news, and that's what the Grappler is pushing for. The Grappler, we might have to put some rules and regulations on his texting routine, obligation, and just presence.
Well, it's like his Twitter account. It's just outrageous, and then he backtracks when he gets called out.
I've been spending the last, I'd say, half an hour going back and forth with the Grappler about this Derek Jeter documentary. I'm sure you guys saw this.
Oh, my goodness. Faldo on that one. And I want to know what it's about, because I'll be sitting by the fireplace in Collingwood waiting for the release date.
Thank you. Thank you. So ESPN next year is coming out with a 6-part documentary about Derek Jeter. And it's from the same producers as The Last Dance. So it's not going to be the exact same thing as Jordan's, but it's going to have a similar vibe probably, with a lot of different people involved, a lot of different parties involved. And the Grappler writes me and goes, Jeter isn't documentary worthy.
Is he not?
Oh,
hold on a second.
God.
I was just about to interrupt
Fire
and
him.
Say, we Fire need a poll.
Together.
I was going to interrupt you, Hayes, and
what
say
a
we need a poll of
an
what do you need to see in that documentary? The Rolodex routine, like there is so many things that I need to see in that. I couldn't care less about
him
playing baseball.
Right.
This guy was the best second baseman in baseball for the New York Yankees.
I know, but I just...
Shortstop for the Yankees. And
sorry,
yes.
Shortstop.
Yeah.
Championships,
but,
all of it.
Exactly. So I'm going to out him a little bit, because he writes me, and he's coming at it from the right angle, because he's thinking of content. He's like, maybe this is a conversation we could have. Who is documentary worthy, right? He said, of course, Brady, he believes, is documentary worthy. I believe there is one coming out on Brady. MJ, he said, but he went to war with me on Jeter, and he just said he's not an all-time great, not that interesting. People outside of New York aren't going to care. And I just wrote back, LOL, maybe your worst take ever. Like, basically
Dude,
saying, I can't get into it right now.
He said that to get his name on the show. Well, he knew he would piss you off and that you would say his name, how dumb that is.
He responded after I said that with a – because the three dots pop up for 15 minutes. I'm like, here it goes. Like, yeah. this is his War and Peace, right? Yeah. The Grappa's going to write me a 5,000-word text here on why the Jeter documentary doesn't make sense. And I responded with this. Face of the Yankees for 20 years, 5 World Series, 3,000 hits, and the best dating rotation in sports history. But okay, Grappler, maybe you're right. Maybe that's not something we'd be interested
Drop
in.
Drop the mic and
case
go to hell, Grappler.
Case
like, that's
dismissed.
Ridiculous.
It's crazy.
Dude,
crazy
I got to think that Jeter, like I would love to see Brady. I'd like to see one on Wayne Gretzky, maybe the Oilers back in the day. I love well, since that Chicago Bulls, The Last Dance, I want it all on Docs.
It's so great.
Like, dude,
so
I want one that comes out either young. I want one on Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid training in Arizona. I'd watch that.
Right.
I would love to see that.
We would, but my whole thing is do you care about, you know, what he was thinking going into a game? Or with Jeter, there's just so many layers there.
Absolutely.
Like, do you care, like, oh, yeah, like, I was dating this girl, but this one, like there's going to be probably a whole section on his dating routine.
No, the
or
guy's
rotation.
Married now. This guy's married
it's
now.
It's still got to be there. It's got to
be there.
Oh, really? The shower routine?
I'm not saying details. I'm not saying graphic details of what this guy was up to. But you have to include it in the script. Like, it is a part of what makes Derek Jeter Derek Jeter. I mean, the guy.
Hayes, don't you think his wife's going to say to him, listen, man, I know who you were back in the day, but we're married now, and do you really have to go back there and talk about how cool you was that scene? I guarantee you they have that conversation.
Well, they might, but listen, I would like to believe she's like, hey, I'm with Derek Jeter now. I got a ring. We're together, and that's his life.
Right.
I mean, everyone knows it, right? Like, we can all be adults here. Hopefully they can be adults. Clearly, there's got to be a line that would be drawn where it's like you can't get into these details about what was going on. Like, I don't think the gift basket story is coming up. Put it that way. I don't think gift baskets are going to be confirmed or denied on this six-piece documentary about Jeter. But you got to mix in something about what this guy was up to in New York. I mean, that's what makes it so compelling. He was the biggest bachelor in New York. He was the king of New York for 20 years.
And I want interviews.
He's always got teammates. It's just I don't think he goes there, man.
I think you're dying for it.
I need it, right, Noodles? I need
them to go. We've interviewed Leo DiCaprio, and DiCaprio's out one night and goes, "Yeah, Jeter walks in after hitting a grand slam, and the place is packed." And like I think there's layers to this upon layer, because you're right. It depends on like I'd like to see Tom Brady's. But would Tom Brady's be boring because he wouldn't let you know anything? He wouldn't let you know where he's like. Yes, I mean Tom's married with
Grappler,
kids.
The number two.
But no. I'm asking.
Boring?
If you're just talking what he felt like going into Game 6 or whatever, I understand it. I'd watch it. What I'm talking about, I got to see Michael Jordan, the person, which was really cool. Whether you like him or don't like him, this guy was an animal. Like. The gambling story, like, I may have broken curfew and that. Like, for him to tell it, and he dumbed it down, him possibly getting poisoned by a pepperoni pizza, you know, like that type of stuff. The basketball was amazing. The behind-the-scenes stuff, that's what people are dying
that's
for.
That's what drives it home. Like that. Yes, of course. Listen, the field of play, if we're talking Jeter, Brady, and Jordan, like over the past 30 years, those are three of the five most compelling athletes in sports, in large part because of where they played. Like Jeter, for sure, I understand it. If Jeter was a member of the Milwaukee Brewers for 20 years, it would have a different feel. Of course it
right.
would. But he wasn't. He was a part of the Yankees, and they're the number one team in baseball. They're the number one team in maybe pro sports in terms of being polarizing. You either love them or you hate them. There's no gray area.
Right.
There's no one that kind of likes the Yankees or kind of dislikes the Yankees. And Jeter's whole story, there's got to be behind-the-scenes stuff that comes with a six-piece documentary.
Right.
And hopefully he supplies it. Hopefully he's got some beefs. You got to believe A-Rod comes up a lot in this, right? His relationship with A-Rod. There's just so much there.
A-Rod coming to the Yankees, having to play third base.
Absolutely.
Whole routine there.
Absolutely. Right. Like, we can bring the Grappler on. I know he's got a mic and – Yeah, last time he came on, I was worried he was going to pass out.
No, yeah. it's the dumbest thing. Go ahead, Grappler.
What if you can bring the Grappler in, we'll give you 30 seconds here to try to explain yourself, because maybe I'm not painting the accurate picture here in terms of what you were trying to express. But go ahead if you got us and explain yourself here why you don't think a Derek Jeter documentary is worth producing right now.
I just personally think that he's not an overly exciting person, as we've talked about. Other than the dating Rolodex, a fairly he's a boring person. When has Derek Jeter had a memorable quote? What has Derek Jeter said over his career? It's like, oh yeah, I remember that Jeter quote.
But that's
I'll
the point
text
here,
you one.
Grappler. Yeah, we could text.
All right, sounds good.
We've got a couple that we've heard through the grapevine, but this is what we're talking about, Grappler. That's why you hopefully get him to sit down and finally open up. Aren't you – like, I know you're a Blue Jay fan, so it's easy to hate on Jeter because he roasted the Jays for 20 years. And you're a younger guy, so maybe you're not as privy to what he was doing in the late 90s, early 2000s. And, yes, by the end, it was a struggle at short. And, listen, his last couple of years were pretty bad, quite frankly. But you got to have an appreciation for what he represents and the team he played for and how much winning, 3,000 hits.
Yeah. What about how clutch that guy – how many hits did he have – slapping a double Oppo under the gun when the New York Yankees needed it. Do you know how many times Derek Jeter did that, man, when
cutoff,
they were winning?
The cutoff to the
plate cutoff
is one
in
of
Oakland?
The most famous clips
in
history.
Oh, God.
Let me ask the Grappler this question, and you'll get your answer. Would you rather have a six-part series on Jeter or a six-part series on Joey Bats?
Oh, Joey Bats. Not even close.
Get this guy off the
screen. What? Okay, hang up on this
okay,
guy.
No, that's a joke. I take it back. I take it back.
You're
that's
done.
A lie. That's
get
a lie.
Out of
that's
here.
A lie.
You're
I
out.
Take it back.
You're out.
Come on, Greg.
No, give me my Go give ahead. Me my 30 seconds. To, okay, so Go in ahead. Terms of what he did on the field, this is why I feel he isn't worthy of a documentary. Never won an MVP award and wasn't a centerpiece of his team. Hayes, as I said to you, I feel that if you take him off any of those five World Series championship Yankee teams, they still win the title.
No way, man.
You've got
that
guys like that team
take.
Was – every team he played with had so much talent around him.
Of
Bernie
course.
Williams, Tino Martinez, Paul O'Neill, Justice, Teixeira, A-Rod, Alfonso Soriano, our favorite – our buddy Chuck Knobloch even. Like, all those guys, I would argue, were more talented at the plate and made a bigger difference, you know, each – you know, year in, year out when they were at their best. Jeter doesn't strike me as someone who was feared when you were at the for pitchers who were on the mound pitching
serious,
to him.
Grappler.
He wasn't a guy that was intentionally
hits.
Walked often.
He had 3,000.
Yeah, because he played for 20 years. He played
what about
for 20
the fact,
years.
My buddy just sent me the text, Grappler, and he said, arguably, Johnny Germain said, arguably the best shortstop of all time, isn't he?
He'd be in the conversation.
I mean,
there's been a lot of great shortstops over the course of the history of the game, but he's up there. I mean,
New York City, World Series, huge games, just a huge lifestyle. I think that's the dumbest thing you've ever said in your life. And we don't want to hear any more of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, Grappler, I just
Malls, cut
I
him off.
Behind it. I can't get behind it.
I just Googled it. It took me 2 seconds, and I just Googled Jeter lineup. And it came up with a bunch of women. Like, it wasn't like Jeter in the lineup. It wasn't Jeter's shortstop. Like,
oh,
it came up
Mariah
with a
Carey
list of
out
girlfriends.
In left field.
Tyra
yeah, yeah.
Banks and Scarlett Johansson, Jessica Alba. Like, I'm Jessica
greatest
Biel.
Greatest dating life in the history of sports.
Like,
that we're privy to. It's just,
you get
it's a fact.
One episode out of six on just his single life, on like what he did on a weekend where they had a series, you know, and he had some time off. Like, that's it for me, just to see what this guy was up to. And yeah, not detailed. I know he's married, he's happy, but it's just respectfully, it can be done that this guy was Clooney. This guy was
exactly, exactly.
You know,
and guess who will be watching?
Right,
the Grappler.
The grappler
will be watching.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Anyway, Grappler, look, you supplied great content, and that's a good job. That's what we're looking for. But so he was going at me about Jeter, and then he's going at us about, you know, Jim Benning and maybe what could be happening in Vancouver.
He's crabby today.
You
want to ask Sheldon Keefe if he'd watch that six-part series? I guarantee you he would.
Of course,
wow.
Sheldon.
We just got a tweet from a fan saying, I'm a big Yankees fan, and I agree with the Grappler.
Wow.
I'd rather see one on A-Rod or Bonds. It would be better content. For years, Jeter was the second best shortstop on his team, but uninteresting.
Well, I mean, that's true. To answer your question, A-Rod is better than Jeter. But he's also loaded with PEDs and got caught multiple times.
Exactly.
But he was better at short. He's a better player. You know, like you can go down the list of the all-time great shortstop, but Jeter would be on that list. It's not about, though, him being the best player of all time. It's about his story. You know, it's about intrigue. It's about entertainment. It's about putting forth 6 hours of production that is going to be worthy of attention. And I can't imagine Derek Jeter wouldn't be able to supply that. And I look forward to it being released next year. And we'll track to see if the grappler decides to watch it or not. Maybe right. He'll protest. Maybe he won't. Maybe he'll cite this show today.
Maybe it's for Al's brother next week. We'll do, like, Stanley Cup chances top seven, and then top seven docs what should be out there.
That is a great idea. And there probably is an age issue here. Josh tweeting and saying, really, it comes down to how old you are. I never saw him play, so I couldn't care less. Grappler's 30. It wouldn't have been in his wheelhouse. He knows Jeter. He would have seen Jeter for sure. I remember I went down to see him his last series at the Dome. Like, it was something I had to see him. Like, Jeter's in town for the last time. I'm going to go check it out.
Don't kid yourself. You think he did work in New York City, every place in the AL East and throughout the league.
Yeah, there was a Rolodex. There was a bat symbol going out, and Jeter was rolling through town.
That's what it is. This guy was the DiCaprio of pro sports.
Yeah, that's just the fact. There really is no dancing around it. So
right.
Anyway, it's going to be established, and it's going to happen. We mentioned Sheldon Keefe. He'll join us in about 10 minutes. So we got a lot to get into with him. He's confident, as he should be, feeling good about his team, where his team is at. They get started on Thursday night. I'm sure he's been watching the playoffs. Yeah. I mean, how can you not?
That's what I want to ask him. Like, what do you think it does for the guys watching the great Florida-Tampa series, Boston Wash? Is it motivate them? Does it make them anxious? I don't know what that would do for guys. Probably make them a little bit anxious.
Well, you have to – I keep saying this. Like, every series is going to take on its own story. Like, the intensity is ramped up, absolutely. But some teams aren't going to be able to play like Washington and Boston or Tampa and Florida that way, that vitriol. They're going to have to play their own way and make it work for them. But Colorado, like Colorado-St. Louis, St. Louis tried to take it nasty, and Colorado said, we're just going to rinse you and put up 50 shots.
But they weren't shy. Like Landeskog, I didn't know he could fight, man.
He laid a beating on
Shen last night.
But that was cool, and that sent a statement, too.
Absolutely.
Like, you want to mess with Rantanen? Guess who's going to be there? Like, my line mate, Team Toughness. And Landeskog can back it up. Like, he is a guy who's not shy to be physical, but – that was emotion, and I kind of loved it. Like, and Shen was like, good, let's do this. Like, he wasn't running from it.
No, of
he's
course.
A, he's a tough kid. Like, him and his brother, they both stand up for themselves. But that was a sneaky good game, but Colorado was – if Jordan Binnington didn't play well, like, that was an 8-1.
That was not even close. That looked like a couple of things. It looked like a team in Colorado that has been waiting for this all year. Like, it had been, like, frothing at the mouth. Like, get us back to the playoffs and let us prove what we have and what we're capable of doing. And the Blues looked like the team they were in the regular season, right? They looked like a team that barely got in, almost got in by default. Like, we talk about the North Division and the bottom of it. That division, the bottom of it is terrible. You know, like, St. Louis got in almost by default. And you got a situation there where, again, if you're the Leafs, I think you're hoping – to have the same response that Colorado did. Like, from day one, you had high expectations. You followed through with a really good regular season, ready to go, healthy, all good, and pounce. And that's exactly what happened last night. We got a few games in the Stanley Cup playoffs tonight. A goalie change down in Florida. 10 sheets on the bench for game two tonight.
That's Q, though.
As
Q's
he should.
Q's the guy that put Corey Crawford on the bench, and Scott Darling played ahead of Corey Crawford.
Right.
That's cute,
now,
man.
Corey Crawford wasn't making $10 million for the next 5 years after this.
Right.
But, yeah, that's a pretty bold statement. And yeah. Dreger will go tonight. So we'll get into that later this afternoon. Rays coming up. Confirm or deny just after 6 o'clock. Sheldon Keefe will join us, head coach of the Maple Leafs, ahead of game one on Thursday night. We'll tee up the series with him. We'll catch up with Sheldon next. All right, Sheldon Keefe will join us here in just a moment. We'll look ahead to game one Thursday night. You can hear that right here on TSN Radio. Game one of the Oilers Jets tomorrow night, also on TSN Radio. We're looking forward to that. We'll tee that up as we move forward this afternoon and into tomorrow. I got to call myself out a little bit because there was some hypocrisy on my end, although it's out of my control. But I did an interview with the Leafs Nation Network with Danielle and Big Daddy. They do their morning show all the time. They do a great job.
They do.
And we set it up through Zoom, and I did it on my laptop. I should have done it through the phone that I use every day on radio and TV because it works so well. But I decided to do it Zoom on the laptop, and the audio wasn't great.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was a bit spotty, and I saw a clip
of
it.
So they were shaking their heads at you saying, get this loser off.
They didn't do that, but I went back and watched a bit of it. I'm like, they totally would have been right. And within their own lane to say, this is not acceptable. And I hear you every day just snapping about phone lines and look at you. You're a hypocrite because it sounded okay, but it wasn't great. It wasn't perfect. And if I was on the other end of it and it was Danielle and her laptop, I might be like, head shake, little horse eye towards Mullen or the grappler.
You would have done more than that. You would have flushed them and said, call me from a cell phone or something.
Potentially.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I probably would have snapped a little bit. But it was cool to be on with them. And everyone down at MLSC is jacked up, clearly. Everyone's gearing up for Thursday night, game one down at Scotiabank. Leafs Habs, you can hear it again right here on TSN Radio. And here's the head coach of the Maple Leafs, Sheldon Keefe. How you doing, Sheldon?
I'm doing good, but there better not be any sound issues or I'm out.
Yeah.
Hang up on you. Brian Hayes will hang up on you.
Yeah. We don't accept that around here. How dare you? How dare you not have five bars and 5G as you call in here? But we were talking about, you know, the layoff for you guys, and I guess the same thing applies with Edmonton and Winnipeg. Obviously, you're preparing for Thursday night, preparing for the series, but with all this other playoff action going on, do you find yourself caught up in that? Are you watching the other games?
I have been, yeah. It's been, like you say, it's a combination of having the extra time between us getting started here and the end of our regular season, but also just the nature of the games have kind of get you caught up. I've been, had my head buried in the computer lots, but found myself looking up quite a bit because the games have been great and close and lots of emotion, of course, and seeing fans back in the building. There's been lots of reasons to tune in.
Sheldon, that's what we were talking about before you came on is, you know, you're paying attention to the other series and you just mentioned the emotion. Every series has its own path. Obviously, the emotion is going to be a lot higher because it's the playoffs. But how about the physicality of it? Is it something that you're going to have to talk with the guys and say, hey, you know, do what you do best? Or is it just going to come, I guess, naturally for your group, the emotion raised, the physicality raised just because it's the playoffs?
I would say both, Jamie. I think it's going to come naturally. Like you say, I mean, you know, playoff hockey is about, and players themselves feel that. They know what's at stake and respond to the moment. Increased physicality is something that we've talked about really right from the beginning of training camp. And I've referenced some of our previous experiences and where we've fallen short there. And, you know, partially with some of the changes we've made to our personnel, but also just the mindset of our team. We've wanted to show signs of growth in that area. I think we have. I have no doubts about our ability to not only play through that and handle it, but also initiate it and be on the attack ourselves.
Well, there's been a lot of chatter about how the Habs may approach the series, and based on their lineup, they're taking a lot of kids out of the lineup. They're going with veterans. They're going with bigger bodies. I know you spoke on it a bit this morning, but how do you balance trying to have a read on what they're going to bring and countering what the Habs are going to bring, but also keep in mind who you are and what makes you the team that you are?
Well, I think it's, you know, there's part of what you're saying is our team and how we're going to play, but there's also, you know, individuals. There's guys on our team that we don't want, overly engaged in anything like that. They got to play their game, got to make plays, got to find ways to produce offense and play through the physicality. We got other guys that need to bring that level of physicality themselves. And probably most importantly, we just got to make sure we're physical on the puck. And that means, you know, winning pucks back and winning battles, establishing body positioning. And then when we have the puck, bringing it to tough areas and be willing to, you know, go to the difficult spots. You know, you're going to trust that the officials are going to do their job and call the game. And then I think, you know, you look at least some of the series, there's been, you know, a number of penalties that have been called and things like that. So we'll have to adjust to those sort of things. But I don't have any doubts in our team's ability to respond. And like I say, it's a team mindset for sure, but it's also, you know, the individuals kind of know who they are and what they bring. And that's part of the reason why we've added the experience that we have. Those guys know exactly who they are and what they need to do out there.
This wait must be awful. I would hate it myself, but you've got this storied rivalry, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens. What are you looking forward to the most? Is it just the bus pulling up or walking to the rink, the warm-up, drop of the puck? What is the one thing that you're really looking forward to?
I'd say it definitely has to be the drop of the puck, Jeff. I mean, like you said, it's been the wait's been a little bit grueling here. I thought going into it that it would be, you know, it would be okay, just given, you know, time to rest and proper practice time and all of that. But we just had two practice days, and then we gave the players a day off here today. And today feels like we're, you know, starting to drag on a little bit here. But fortunately, we've got a chance to ramp it back up with practice tomorrow. And then I know certainly, you know, the guys are going to be excited to get playing here, because it has been a long wait for sure. And it's been a challenge as a coaching staff to not overdo it in terms of information and things like that. We just got to be really ready. Most importantly, just be ourselves and play our game.
Chatting with Sheldon Keefe, head coach of the Maple Leafs, Leafs Habs, Thursday night, game one. You can hear right here on TSN Radio. Jack Campbell will get the start, and he's had a spectacular year. But obviously, Freddie Anderson, you know, he's a part of the team. He'll back up, and he's a guy who's established himself in this market and with this team for quite some time. So with Campbell going, what was your message to Freddie Anderson?
Well, you know what, I think, first of all, I think Fred has just, you know, had great self-awareness in terms of his situation, his circumstances. He hasn't played, and in his absence, you know, Jack has played extremely well, and the team has played well. So he's understanding of that. He wants to play. He's a competitor and has confidence in his ability to help our team, and we have confidence in him. So he's just, you know, he knows he's got to keep working and keep staying ready. He's been working extremely hard in practice. I will say his attitude and his work ethic and just his whole approach since he's gotten back in the net and back on skates coming through his injury and working his way back has been tremendous. And that's been really great to see. So we have no doubts there that he's going to be, provide great support for Jack. And of course, we don't know what playoffs bring in terms of the twists and turns and ups and downs and all of that. He'll be ready if called upon, but we've got great confidence in Jack and how he's been playing. I know he's excited to get going here.
Sheldon, you've got some, I guess it's positive, but you've got some decisions to make regarding your roster because you've got health. And, you know, some guys will be in, some guys will be out. Can you speak to a guy like Riley Nash, who hasn't, you know, played a game with the guys in the regular season, but it seems like you've got him penciled in at a pretty good spot. Just the trust that you have in him, what he brings to, you know, your roster and where you, what you'd like to see out of him.
Yeah, you know what, it's of course strange circumstances in a strange season, you know, short amount of time from the trade deadline to the playoffs, and we acquire an injured player and you knew there was a risk that he wouldn't potentially play at all in the regular season. But you mentioned it early on there in your question about depth, and we just felt that was a really important thing to have for ourselves. And Riley's played this type of a role in the playoffs before and found success. So we trust that he's going to be able to bring that to us as well. Of course, we haven't seen it in our team dynamic or anything like that. But again, when you acquire these experienced players and you've watched them around our team and you've watched them in our practices and you have conversations with him, he gives you confidence that he's going to be able to deliver on what he does. And that's being a very responsible defensive player that you can trust when he's on the ice. He's going to take care of the game and take care of the puck. He's going to help his line mates. He's going to be able to kill penalties and help on face-offs and do all these kind of things that really help us become a complete team and gives us a different dimension. And again, just the additional depth and having another player that can help us. So I like the, of course it's not ideal that we haven't seen him in a game and hasn't had that experience, but we've found great value in the practices and the meetings that we've had. So we'll roll with it. And, despite that, we still have confidence in, our depth, whether it's Alex Galchenyuk or Pierre Engvall, or even Adam Brooks has come in on the fourth line and played tremendously for us. So we feel really good about that, particularly when I compare it to what we went through last season.
You're Sheldon Keefe, and Riley Nash is on a line with Mikheyev and Kerfoot at practice. And you've been seeking out that conventional third line checking line really since day one of camp. You've referenced it. You even started the year with Hyman on that line. Why have you been seeking it as diligently as you have been, and why is it so important to establish a line that you can maybe bury in the defensive zone come playoff time?
Well, I think, Brian, the biggest thing that to me as a coach on the bench is that you just go through different things in a game, and face-offs is a big one that, the face-offs in your end, usually the other team's best players or close to the best players or the best offensive people are going to be coming over the boards. And, you have to make a decision who you're going to put out there. And I just find a lot of times I default to Austin or John to go out and take on those responsibilities. And that's a lot. I mean, these guys take on a lot of responsibility all over the ice. And they're great players, and they're capable of doing that. But sometimes you look down the bench for a very important face-off at an important time in a key matchup, and those guys are tired. They've just come off the ice, and you need another line that you put out in that spot and you feel confident as a coach, and it helps the team run, and you're not overdoing it with other guys. So that has been an important thing for me. It still very much is. Obviously, that's part of our vision here in putting this line together. But we have lots of different options now with the way that our team is set up. The guys in the lineup, guys out of the lineup. You got Hyman and Foligno playing, one with Austin and Mitch and Foligno with John and Will. We've got players that can be moved around and play in different spots, and it just makes me feel a lot more comfortable as a coach that I can manage the bench appropriately as the intensity ramps up and the fatigue starts to set in during games.
Sheldon, I have an idea, and you tell me if it's stupid, okay? I have zero desire to ever play hockey again, but the only time I do is when I see like a pump-up part of a Rocky movie. Why not fire that up for the boys on a TV screen before you hit the ice?
So, I mean, Jeff, you played long enough. Surely you had this experience. Yeah. I think that's just generally in the coach's playbook, I think. From every team I've dealt with. But, yeah, our team at MLSC does a terrific job of putting different things together and maybe not so much Rocky specific, but our own versions.
Yeah, I'd be worried there. I thought you were hanging videos. Up on me.
Yeah,
No.
Probably worthy.
No, not a totally foolish idea. I think there's some merit to that. I'll tell you why. You know what? Especially here, I mean, usually coaches are firing all sorts of information and video on their opponents and stuff like that over the course of time leading up to a series. And by the time that you get ready to drop the puck, the last thing you want to hear about is your opponent or anything that the coach wants from you. You just put something on and crank the tunes and get at it. And I think we're certainly approaching that point right now.
I thought he was going to offer up his services for the power play. That's where I thought you were going.
Yeah.
Like, you'd set up the one timer on the wall, because that's obviously been a big topic of discussion. And, I mean, you've probably been watching a lot of tape, and you guys have been really working on it in practice. And we're trying to get a read on it. You know, on the outside looking in, you guys have so much talent. The first 20 games of the year, you guys were on like a historical pace. And then the last 20-25, the bottom fell out. What is your theory on this, Sheldon? Like, why has the power play not been able to click for really quite some time?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, obviously, obviously, if the answers were easy, we would have already seen that
right.
growth. But as we've gone through this, of course, it's been the top of our priority list to go through. I think we've gone through lots of different phases of what's happened here. Like, it started with, you know, we had some pretty set units and we were rolling pretty good, and then started with injuries to Simmons and Thornton, and then you had Austin and his wrist situation, and he was playing, seemed like a different spot every game, and even when we had him in his regular spot, he wasn't willing or able to shoot the puck. And then the schedule and practice and all these kind of things become challenges, and the bottom's falling out, it gets away on you, and that's kind of where we've been at. But certainly as a coaching staff, got to do a better job of that. We're well aware of it. I think we've seen some signs of life in the last couple of weeks in terms of how we're moving the puck, and we're spending a lot more time in the offensive zone. I think it's just a matter of time. You know, we've used the unit of John with Austin and, you know, Will and Mitch playing together. I think you'll still see that, and we're going to continue to have that as an option for us. We're going to, you know, look also to have the two balanced unit approach and maximize our time through the full 2 minutes and those kind of things. But certainly we're aware of it being an area of significance coming into the playoffs, and not just that, but our penalty kill, which we think has been quite strong and one of the best in the league to finish out the season in the last 10 games. We want to continue to build on that, and the additions that we've made through Foligno and Nash, I think, will help. But certainly the power play has got to be rolling. We've got to put it all together, you know, from special teams, power play, penalty kill, 5-on-5 play, goaltending. You got to be firing in all those areas if you want to be serious in the playoffs.
With Sheldon Keefe, game one Thursday night, speaking with you last offseason a couple of different times, having Kyle on a couple of different times, the conversation kept coming back to the core players. And generally the conversation was being derived from what Tampa did a year ago and Braden Point and Kucherov, and we saw them a couple of nights show up and do what they did. You guys have, you know, a core of players here who've had spectacular years, Austin and Mitch in particular. John really had a great second half. Nylander had a quality second half. Those are your horses. Obviously, you have a ton of confidence in them, but why do you believe, and I'm sure you do, this is the year where it's all going to connect and they are capable of driving you guys to a place you really want to get to?
Well, I think all we can do is go off of what they've delivered to this point. I mean, we've seen it right from day one of training camp. Or I guess I could take it even further from just how they came out of that Columbus series and, you know, the disappointment that they felt, and the fact that they themselves individually and us as a team collectively didn't want to be disappointed again, and we were going to put in the necessary work and have the necessary conversations to make growth in the areas we needed to. I think we've done that from day one of camp, and I think those guys that you're referring to, those leaders, have led the way for us, both in their production and their attitude, and they've gotten tremendous support underneath them. And I think that's probably the biggest area here, is those guys feel really, really, truly supported, both on the ice and in the room, that we've got a real great foundation of unity, I guess, is the biggest thing, that they're, you know, they have support. They go out there and do their thing. They know they have to lead the way for us, but everybody has a role to play. And I think we just really have a cohesive group, more so certainly than we did when we were going at this thing a year ago.
Well, we'll get you out of here with the historical question. You were not alive the last time the Leafs and Habs played in the playoffs, but you're a greater Toronto area guy. You grew up in the city. Obviously, you coach the team, and obviously this is very personal for you, and you want to get to the games and you want to win the games. But do you think you'll allow yourself at all to kind of take a step back as a Toronto guy and now the head coach of the Leafs to take in the history? And how significant is it that you're going to play a primary role and a pivotal role in the first playoff series between these two teams in over 40 years?
Yeah, it's not lost on me. I mean, I recognize the I recognize the significance of it, despite, you say, not being alive for it. I've dealt with many Leaf and Hab fans, over the years. I think it's obviously been way too long since these two teams have met up. And as a result, he's probably got a generation of people there that don't necessarily recognize the significance of it. And I think a lot of that would probably include a number of the players playing in the series. But I think, especially with the lead up coming up to this and the Canadian division, the nature of that, you know, you can feel it coming back. And, you know, whether it's the rivalry or whether it's the fact that our team's got to push through this hurdle, you know, of winning a playoff series, you know, lots of reasons for motivation and lots of great responsibility that I feel as the coach and leader of the team. And I think you know, our players recognize that as well and just ready to drop the puck and get going.
It's going to be a fun one Thursday night. It should be a fun ride. Best of luck moving forward. We always appreciate you taking time for us. Good luck, and thank you for doing this, Sheldon.
You got it. Be well, guys. Thank you.
You got it. Sheldon Keefe, the head coach of the Maple Leafs.
That's a
almost hung up on you. He almost hung up on that. I mean, it was a good question. I wanted to follow up on it because
the Rocky question was no good.
Yeah, it was very good, but I was laughing because I thought you were going to talk about one timer on the power play too.
That's what I thought he was doing. I really did. I'm like, he's going to offer up a one timer on the power play.
But the other thing is too, you got to choose the right song. I had a coach one time play the Garth Brooks "Standing Outside the Fire," and we were going out to that, and we just got rinsed. I think we gave up 5 in the first period. Like it was like, what the hell was that? He's like,
there's
guys,
nothing
you know, like,
worse when a guy gets emotional and tries to just lay it all out there, and you go out there and get absolutely crushed.
Oh my God, our ass handed to us.
My
like he had this emotional speech, and then he's like, hit it. He says to the assistant coach, and it's like, standing outside the fire, and like we're all just like, okay, let's go out here and see what happens. And we came in after the first. And I remember somebody going, what the hell was that? Like it was almost like that took every ounce of the air out of our balloon to go out. Like
right.
We were
I would
fired
have started
up.
Laughing and said, that's enough. Yeah, let's
well,
go.
I like that song, but I don't know if that's the song to go
poor
out
timing.
To.
Garth Brooks has not, he doesn't have any song that should ever be played in a moment like that.
Like but pump to pump you
like
up.
Like to pump the boys up and to send a message and get you, yeah, just fired up and, you
right.
know, the coach had probably thought about it for days, and he's like, I'm going for it. I'm going with it, and I know it's going to inspire this crew. And then you guys just go out there and get rinsed.
We weren't a great team, but I will say, like, that was a tough one because I look back on it, like, I don't
but
think.
Jamie, you know what it's like? You own that, and you live with it. Like, every time I saw that coach at a golf tournament, I'd go out to him and say, standing outside the fire.
Thanks for the help there. Thanks for the pep talk there, Gipper.
Yeah,
thanks for helping the boys out.
That was tough, too.
That one hurts.
Like, yeah, we got – I swear to God, it was 5-0 before we even blinked.
Yeah, that one, that's not good. That's not a good scene. Another not a good scene was spotted down at Kiawah Island, and we'll tell you about what was spotted gearing up for the PGA Championship a little bit earlier this afternoon.
If it's what I think it is, it was –
outrageous and offside. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.
It's not enough just to stand outside the
fire. This is the worst possible song ever to pump up the boys. Like, what was he thinking?
I know this is the one where you're like, if this, it's in a country kind of movie or like it makes you like think
there.
Deep and be passionate or whatever. It's like, but to go out and for a hockey game, you would absolutely get rinsed with this tune playing. It's a fireable offense.
Really is.
I remember it being on the TV and you could see him with the guitar and like the fire around him.
So he played the video, like the music.
I think it was
video.
Like the
playing balls.
Yeah, it was.
That's,
I mean, it's a great song.
Yeah, it's a good song. It's not, I don't know if it's a great song. It's a good song, but it doesn't work. It's not going to happen.
I love Garth Brooks. I love Garth Brooks, and I skated with him one time after a concert. Like he's a big hockey fan and stuff. Like met him several times. He's an amazing person. I think our buddy Chaser is like really close with him. Like,
of course
good
would
buddies
be.
With
it. Well, but, speaking of country, did you see the pictures of Nashville that opened this weekend?
Oh, yeah.
like 400,000 people in Nashville this weekend. Sorry, continue your thought.
No,
there,
that's it. I mean, I got sidetracked too because all I'm seeing is like there's certain places where it's just over. Like they're like, yeah,
oh, it's
COVID's
wild.
It's over.
Man.
We're done.
Like,
you know,
Nashville. I just saw the pictures today. Like. It's rammed anyway. Like pre-COVID, it's hot.
It's the horniest place on earth right now.
Honestly, like I do think we're on the verge of the roaring 20s. Like I it's kind of like deja vu. Like you had the Spanish flu in 1918, 1919, and then the boys and girls came out with their party hats on for the 20s. And I kind of think that's what is going to be happening here, and I think it's already happening down in the States. And Nashville, like Broadway, I just saw like aerial shots. It's just humans. You can't see concrete anywhere. It's just human beings walking around and absolutely getting crushed and going into honky tonks and partying like crazy.
Playing Garth Brooks standing
outside. Well, guess what? That's happening all over the city right now. Like this stay at home order. Outside of golf courses, one's
that's the
at
only
home.
Place you can't go.
I would
dude,
drive today,
I live down on the water. There's 100,000 people out on the water. I'm like, how can they be doing this? And I can't go tee it up.
It's the
They're
only
lounging
place.
Around, having wine coolers, smoking weed on a blanket, but I can't go tee it up. I don't get it.
It's Woodstock down by the water.
It's exactly what it is. It's Woodstock.
Yeah. All right. Hour two coming up. We'll show you the picture of a fan down at Kiowa. Ray Ferraro coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.